obviously, I mean, conservatives believe that President H.W. Bush's nomination of Davis Souter was one of the most colossal blunders of presidential decision-making in modern history. You know, he had this great moment to change the direction of the court. A liberal icon, William Brennan, was stepping down, and he nominates David Souter, who ends up being a big liberal. You know, I mean, it was just, to conservatives, that was a very, very bitter, bitter reality. And George W. Bush, the son, was seared. I mean, seared is the word his advisors use, by that Souter nomination, and he was determined not to repeat his father's mistake. And the Souter nomination actually kind of hangs over all of the nominations that President Bush made, because his legal team so carefully and closely vetted all the potential nominees to make sure that they were solid conservatives and they weren't going to get up there and drift to the left like some of the other justices do. And it also drove his thinking on Harriet Myers, which I think is just astonishing. You know, President Bush saw his dad nominate David Souter. His dad's advisors told him that Souter is going to be conservative. They told him that Souter would not change. Of course, they had no idea what they were talking about. And, you know, his dad didn't know David Souter. So he's just relying on what his advisors tell him. Well, George Bush knew Harriet Myers. He knew she was conservative. He looked into her eyes. She was a conservative, and she was not going to change. And so that really shaped, I mean, the experience with his father's experience with Souter really shaped his decision to nominate Harriet Myers. And, of course, conservatives reacted when they heard about the Myers nomination as if his dad, ironically enough, had just nominated the next David Souter.
Well, that is really a great part of this book. Again, we're talking to Jan Crawford Greenberg. She's the legal correspondent for ABC News covering the Supreme Court and also the author of The Supreme Conflict, which is now out in paperback. And let's talk about that, Jan, and that is regarding the whole Myers debacle, which is really what it turned out to be.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good word for it.
And this came, of course, a couple of months after the Hurricane Katrina, and it really seemed to solidify the George Bush's second term in office in terms of not being a success. There was some original reporting that I read in your book that I hadn't really read anywhere else about Myers, really these meeting with Republican senators here, trying to seal the deal. They were already skeptical of her, but she just did not impress many of them at all when they had their one-on-one discussions.
Oh, no, and it started, you know, right away. You know, President Bush nominates her, and then she's whisked up onto Capitol Hill, where she starts right away meeting with senators. And remember, all these senators have been sitting down for the last month with none other than John Roberts, who is about the most brilliant, you know, judicial mind in the nation. So, you know, she had, it's pretty tough following John Roberts to go up and meet with these senators. But, of course, she had no expertise in constitutional law. So she's unable to really articulate what she's thinking or anything about these cases. And so the senators are just constantly getting frustrated with her, even senators you would expect to be sympathetic to the Bush White House, like Jeff Sessions and Tom Coburn, and, you know, solid conservatives are saying, you know, Harriet, you're going to have to say something next time. And that's what Senator Sessions told her after their meeting. And then all these prep sessions with the lawyers in the White House, you know, they're not going any better either. You know, one of her advisors said it was like trying to teach someone French and expect them to pass a fluency exam, you know, in 3 weeks. They just couldn't teach her these complex issues of constitutional law and then expect her to pass, you know, this fluency exam in 3 weeks.
Right.
And so, you know, the president concluded reluctantly that her nomination was clearly going to go up in flames. Conservatives were turning on her. Liberals were starting to realize that the worse they could make her look, the more, you know, it could look like just some crony of President Bush. Remember, it was on the heels of Katrina and Michael Brown and all that, that, you know, the worse they could make her look, the worse it would make him look. And so he concluded that she had to withdraw. He and Andy Card had a long and painful talk about that and concluded that she needed to step down. So Card went and talked to Harriet Myers, and, you know, she didn't really grasp what he was saying. You know, she just did not. She said, "We'll learn it. I'll do it. We can get it." And then her deputy, Bill Kelly, that afternoon went and said, "You know, you have to withdraw. You know, this is a moment where your interests and the president's interests are in alignment here." And she said, "No, I can learn it. I'll fight." You know, she was like that pit bull in size six shoes, the way President Bush always described her. And it took one more visit by Andy Card for her to realize that President Bush was behind it. He wanted her out. So that night, she wrote out this letter of withdrawal, and her deputy, Bill Kelly, had already called Sam Alito to offer him the nomination.
Indeed. And speaking about Harriet Miers, and I think one reason, of course, the president selected her, other than the fact that he knew her and all that, was that she was a female. And you write in the book that when John Roberts, who, as you mentioned, most people think is his brilliant legal mind, it was received with such acclaim in many quarters. But one place that wasn't received with acclaim was from Sandra Day O'Connor.
That's right. Absolutely. She said, well, he's great in every way, except he's not a woman. She was very, because, you know, she really wanted a woman to replace her. And everyone was telling President Bush to nominate a woman. Even the First Lady, Laura Bush, said, you know, well, I think it'd be nice to have a woman take Justice O'Connor's place. So President Bush really wanted to nominate, and he believes in diversity. He wanted to nominate a woman. And Andy Card, his, of course, chief of staff, told the lawyers in the counsel's office, you know, to find a replacement for Justice O'Connor. And, you know, no white guys. He said it that bluntly, no white guys. And so, you know, they cast a really wide net, but all these potential nominees kept coming up short. Some they didn't think were going to be conservative enough, or they were worried that they would drift to the left, and, you know, President Bush wasn't going to have any of that after David Souter. Others didn't want it. I mean, a couple of the nominees, you know, Miguel Estrada here in Washington, Mara Corrigan on the Michigan Supreme Court, refused to be considered. And then still other women or minority candidates, you know, had other issues or problems that they were afraid Democrats would make a lot of hay with. So the list started shrinking and shrinking. And Democrats, you know, had been remarkably successful in blocking all of President Bush's nominees that were largely all the women and minorities to the appeals courts. So they were out the window. He couldn't nominate those because they never did get through. So, you know, Harriet started looking better and better. And he talked to Andy Card. They decided they thought that made a lot of sense. And then Card asked Meyer's deputy, Bill Kelly, to go and, you know, quietly vet her without letting her know about it. Indeed. So that's how it all started.